for listening to the Higher Ed Podcast. We uncover the future of higher education, current trends, insights from the sector's brightest, and actionable advice for leaders and executives. Creating impactful universities, well-branded colleges, and best-in-class student experiences. Join us as we redefine the sector one episode at a time.
Welcome back to another episode of the Higher Ed Podcast. Unfortunately, Kumar Desjarnais is not able to host this afternoon's podcast, but I'm Kelsey Beiler. I'll be your host today, and I'm going to do my best to keep the conversation engaging. I'm sure that's not going to be very hard because we have a very wonderful and impressive guest with us today. We have Jeff Watson of Guild Education. He is the Senior Vice President. He also serves an advisory role for multiple other education companies. Jeff, do you want to kind of introduce yourself a little bit more and tell us more about your work and what you've been up to?
Sure, Kelsey. Good to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me. I'm Jeff Watson, and I'm a Senior Vice President at Guild Education, as you mentioned. Guild is on a mission, really, to unlock economic opportunity for America's workforce, and we do that through education, the power of education. And my career has really been at the convergence of the future of education and work, and that's my area of passion, and that's what I spend all day thinking about and doing.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I think a lot about that as well. I graduated from college not too long ago, and I've kind of been balancing the, okay, what did that traditional education do for me? And what did it not do for me in today's changing, just workplace landscape? And it's been really interesting to kind of see how how it's changing. And then especially since COVID-19 happened, it's changing a lot more abruptly in probably ways that it wouldn't have before. What are some of your like post-COVID predictions or insights in regards to how everything is changing?
Yeah, I think you're totally right, Kelsey, that COVID accelerated a lot of things that were already starting to happen in higher ed. In education more broadly, and certainly the move, and it really was a forced, urgent move to online learning. What was the most prominent COVID oriented initiative? And so I think a core thing that I think a lot about, and I know people across the education ecosystem are thinking about, is what happens post-COVID. And, you know, knock on wood, there will be a post-COVID. We have mostly experienced, and institutions have delivered a very sort of V1 version of online or remote learning. And for many schools, that really amounts to the same class delivered over Zoom. And I think it was incredible the way the education community galvanized to make sure that they were able to provide and deliver an education to students. But I think everybody would say that experience is lacking. And the real question for me is, how do institutions think about online moving forward? And in my mind, it's going to break into three segments. One is what I would call selectively hybrid, and you already see quite a lot of that, where there are certain courses that are online, there are certain courses that are on campus. Sometimes there are courses that blend those two modalities. I think that is probably going to be about 40% of the institutions fall into that selectively hybrid category post-COVID. I think a very large percent will be in another category that I call return to the mean, which is basically really kind of going back to the way they were delivering programs prior to COVID. And we can talk about why that might be, but I think that will be a pretty substantial part of the institutions. And I think there will be a really small group, maybe 10% or 15% of overall colleges and universities that will go all in on remote learning. And when I say all in, I mean they will make it a core part of their strategic plan. They will really treat it as an equal, if not the primary delivery mechanism for education.
And do you think with all this in mind, kind of universities that are typically really focused on student life, do you think they're going to suffer at all amidst this change? Or, I mean, I know they already have, of course, during the pandemic, but what do you think it's going to be like afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think for a lot of colleges and universities, there is going to be such a hunger from the students, from the faculty to a degree, the administrators, to just snap back to the way it, to something that looks like the way it was from a student life perspective, because that is the one area that I think we've not really started to figure out online, is how do you replicate some of the student life-oriented experiences online that you might otherwise experience on campus? So I think that is a really big question, but one of the reasons that I think there will be such a large group of schools that really, again, return to the mean, so to speak, go back to what they were doing pre-COVID.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to the online learning, I think, of course, every avenue, scenario, situation has its pros and cons, you know, but I think there's just so much opportunity in that online space in regards to, you know, on a baseline social level. I think, you know, younger people are becoming more and more comfortable socializing and creating their social circles online. But even beyond that, just the accessibility of education is something that I'm really excited to see and really hoping to see expand so that more people can, you know, get educated and get degrees and get better jobs. And I know that Guild is doing a lot to make that happen. Do you kind of want to talk about how you partner with companies and use online programs to get more people degrees?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, Kelsey. You know, going back to one thing he said, though, I think people are starting to recognize that online learning opens up education, and specifically higher education, to different populations of students that haven't been served by sort of the traditional modalities and delivery channels of an on-campus experience. And that's really what Guild is doing. We are focused on serving working adult learners. And we do that by partnering with some of the biggest companies in the US, Walmart, Disney, PepsiCo, and others. And we are really helping to up-level their education benefit programs by curating a set of programs and providers that really connect deeply to their talent strategies and their outcomes that they're trying to achieve around things like internal mobility, around DE&I, around retention, and other important initiatives. And the primary delivery mechanism for working adult learners, as you probably know, is through online education. So we really look for academic partners who have really strong capabilities online and really understand how to serve the working adult learner population, which is very, very different than the, I'll call it the traditional 4-year student population.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure, well, I'm not sure, so I'm going to ask you, is this relatively new or an expanding idea of employers providing their employees the education they need to thrive? Or is that something that's really been around for a long time and getting more traction with the online capabilities?
I think it's a great question. It's been around for a long time. The concept of tuition reimbursement, for example, has been around for many years. And really has its roots in even things like the GI Bill and other initiatives that were recognizing that companies could play an important part in providing education to people who wouldn't otherwise be able to access the higher education ecosystem. But it is changing very rapidly. I think a lot of the times those education benefits or tuition reimbursement programs were sort of just seen as another benefit. I don't want to say check the box, but close to that. And I think what we are seeing now is that companies are realizing that education and upskilling is really part of a core strategy. And that's a very, very different way of thinking about these programs. And Guild was founded on the idea that, you know, the typical model is you go to college to get a job. That's sort of the traditional pathway, right? Guild is flipping that on its head with its employer partners and saying, you get a job to actually access education. And that's a really interesting inversion of the model. But there are, depending on which figures you look at, there are, you know, around 100 million or so working adult learners who have either no college or some college but no degree. And that number is staggering, and it dwarfs the quote unquote traditional higher education student population by you know, tenfold or more.
Yeah, and is there any hesitancy from employers to fund their employees' education in regards to, I guess, just employee attrition? Is there any fear that, oh, I'm going to educate these people, and then maybe once they get more qualified, they're going to leave me? Or do you see that typically when they invest in their workers, they kind of stay longer?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the dynamic, is that when companies invest in these types of programs, the level of loyalty to the company goes way up. The level of retention goes way up. And you're creating a much more flexible talent pool, right? And so a lot of companies are starting to realize how powerful a tool education and upskilling can be for all those reasons you mentioned: retention and employer brand, and the other key things that they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it really does seem like such a symbiotic relationship of like, let's make each other stronger and then just both progress. I love that. And I definitely want to see more of that happening, which is why I think Guild is so awesome, because it's absolutely enabling that to happen.
I think one thing that's interesting is if you go back to the traditional tuition reimbursement model, and that's where an employee will go and they'll find their own program, they will have to pay up front for it, and then they will request a reimbursement from their company. That's a good thing. It's not that I would never say that a company paying for somebody's education program isn't a good thing, but there are some real challenges with that as well, particularly around equity. And a lot of people, especially frontline workers, actually can't afford to front the investment for their education, even if they're going to be reimbursed. And you also have to be really self-directed to find a program, register for the program, stay in the program, let alone front the money. And so we're Guild is approaching things in a different model where it's a much more supported experience, which I'm happy to talk more about.
Yeah, please do. I would love to hear more about it.
Yeah, I think there are really a couple of things that we're trying to change in the way education benefits work and the way they're thought of. One is that we actually want the payment to flow from the employer directly to the institution. And Guild sort of sits in the middle of that and makes sure that the eligibility of the employee is correct, that the tuition payments are correct, things like that. But we're really trying to move the market towards that model and away from just the old school tuition reimbursement. The second core thing is that we know how important support is for working adult learners. The rate of fallout from courses and programs is really high, but there is a great intervention, and that is coaching and advising. So Guild has built an entire coaching and advising group so that every learner who comes through Guild has the access to a coach. And, you know, working adult learners are juggling a lot of responsibilities simultaneously, and life gets in the way. And a coach is a really known and established support mechanism to help keep them on track with whatever kind of program they're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking a little bit more about traditional kind of changing. I know one thing that's been happening more and more, or that's been becoming more and more accepted, is kind of the idea of stacking certifications that directly apply to jobs in the workforce. How do you think the relationship between any kind of specific degree, I guess, whether it's associate or bachelor's versus certifications come? Do you think having a plethora of certifications is just as good as any other kind of degree? Do you think it's best to have a degree and then get the certifications? Or what is your kind of opinion or professional perspective there?
Yeah, stackability is going to be key. Really one of the big keys to the evolution of how we think about education and its connection to work. And for those who aren't that familiar with it, stackability is really a concept that you can take shorter form programs, often certificates or other types of short courses. And those shorter form programs provide value to you in and of themselves. But the idea is if you stack a number of those short programs together, it actually gives you a pathway to getting a degree. And we believe that that is not only important, but it's a must for the education system to sort of move to the next level. And I think the question, one of the things that COVID has accelerated is really how companies think about degrees versus short courses. I think in the education benefit world, for good reason, a lot of the focus historically has been on degree completion. And that's really important. And we believe in that in a big way at Guild. But now with COVID, I think what people saw was there is a major transformation from a workforce perspective that had started and now is accelerating through COVID. And shorter form workforce aligned programs are a really incredible tool to help upskill or reskill your team members or your workforce. I think what we're seeing in the market and what we believe is that those shorter form programs will take on greater and greater importance in the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I'm pretty fresh out of college. I graduated December 2019, so right before the pandemic changed everything. And of course, it changed some things for me. But now that I'm out, I have this, you know, full-on degree, and I see myself looking at other certifications that I want. Like, oh, I think it'd be really cool to get into coding, or you know, UX, or all of these other things. And I wish someone would have told me that beforehand, because, you know, it's also more, what's the word? I guess you could say cost effective, right? To enroll in a few, maybe $1,000 programs and collect kind of a suite of capabilities that are probably more applicable than what a college could teach you at definitely a lot less cost. At least in my case, I have all this debt. I'm like, now I want to pay for more certification.
Yeah. And some of those programs really can take you, particularly, let's say, if you're a frontline worker and you go through a really great UI UX design program, the lift that you can achieve economically and from a professional career path perspective is massive, where you can go from being a frontline worker to going into what people would call like a middle skill or a gateway job in technology. There's a lot of talk about the importance of sort of the reskilling or the upskilling of America specifically. And I fundamentally believe that these types of programs are key to making that a reality.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure, you know, you've been in the workforce for a while now. Is there any of this stuff that you wish was kind of around or emerging when you were younger that you would have liked to have taken advantage of? Or are you kind of glad that you came in the way that you did? Or what was your journey like from college to a career?
Yeah, I mean, I wish more of these types of programs were available, although I'm excited that they are available now. And I'm similar to you. Maybe later in my career, but want to take advantage of being able to build new skills. So I will also be accessing some of the programs that Guild offers. The world has changed, and the need for kind of skill fluidity is very different than it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago, when the concept of going through a traditional education and then going to a career, a known career, where you might stay in a company for 10, 15, 20 or more years. I think even the concept of a career has changed. I'm not sure that is language that college students today really even use, right? It's more about, I'm doing a job now. I'm doing it for certain reasons, and that might lead me to another job. And that could be in a very different area or a different, function, but it really, the concept of career, I think, is also really evolving.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a huge change in what that means generationally. Even my professors in college, you know, I was an English major, and they were like, you know, you're going to be a writer. There are so many people who can't write well. You're going to do fine. Everyone freaks out about the English major route, but, you know, you guys are going to do great. And to a certain degree, yes, because writing is a very important skill, just solid communication. Not everybody has that right off the bat. And so, you know, on that hand, they were right, but something that they didn't tell us, and I think something maybe they don't even know to think about or know really how to communicate yet, is to be a, you know, really competent worker these days, you have to do more than just writing. And I'm not talking about creative writing, more like copy, rhetoric, stuff like that. But even beyond that, you know, you have to be a digital designer, and you have to know about SEO, and you have to be able to work with the Adobe Creative Suite. And, you know, I'm not angry because those classes weren't available, but I certainly wish they would have been. And I think, like, you know, that's where that stackability comes in. And that's definitely a generational change?
I think it is a change, but I also think if you look at, you know, surveys from employers, and we talk to employers all the time, our partners, there are also a lot of soft skills that employers say are critical for success. And those are things like communication, you mentioned, problem solving, working and collaborating in teams, critical thinking. And I think it's the pairing of some of those key soft skills, which, traditional education has typically been quite good at cultivating, pairing those soft skills with some of the new harder skills, particularly around digital technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you kind of talk about, for those who are listening to this podcast, Jeff has a wonderful article on his LinkedIn page. It's Higher Ed Predictions 2021. And we're talking about them more in depth here, but we're not going to be able to cover all of them. And I highly recommend that you go check those out. But one of them in regards to, you know, changing technology you have right here is concerns about proctoring technology services. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting space, and particularly when, most schools, K through 12 and higher ed, were forced to go online for the last year. There is a real question of how do you ensure integrity of exams and assessments and other key teaching and tools. And online proctoring has exploded as a result of that. But there's a lot of controversy about it. All you have to do is Google online proctoring, and you will see a lot of articles about the sort of intrusion of online proctoring, concerns about, you know, personal safety and personal liberties wrapped up in that. And so I think this is actually an area that ultimately can do positive things to ensure the integrity of online learning. But I think people are going to look a lot closer at the technology, how it works, and I would expect to see both innovation there, but also reform. And you're starting to see some notable cases in the news where both students and teachers are concerned about how online proctoring works.
Yeah, definitely some issues to be solved, I guess questions to be answered. That's one of the crazy things about technology, is it just moves so quickly. And, you know, whether it's legislation or just best practices or just, you know, general knowledge that you can implement throughout a big organization in general, you know, it's hard to keep up with all of that. So is that a role that exists already? Or do you think that'll be like an emerging role? People who are investigating this, trying to figure it out, trying to make it better for everybody?
That's interesting. I think there are a lot of people who are looking at both, obviously, the security and safety of new technologies. But one area that interests me is also looking at the ethics of new technology. And that goes beyond the education space. Although I think actually higher ed can play a role in helping tech companies define what some of the ethical considerations are in building and deploying new technology. But if you look at some of the bigger companies, the Facebooks of the world and Googles of the world, they have ethicists on staff who are trying to help them navigate some very, very tricky terrain.
Yeah, I want to say, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I watched a documentary on Netflix. I think it was called The Social Dilemma. And it just talks about the ethics of social media, which isn't the same here. But in that case, one of the people that was talking on it, he has a whole nonprofit devoted to ethics and technology, which, you know, it's a new idea, a new concept for a lot of us. So that is definitely going to be something that we'll need to watch out for. It'll be interesting, hopefully exciting, not as scary, but yeah, it's just crazy how many changes are happening. So, and I feel like, you know, this 2019, 2020 was really a precipice for that.
Yeah. And, you know, sitting at Guild, which is a public benefit corporation, a B Corp, you know, which is a really, a relatively new thing. We're committed to balancing, you know, the social impact of what we do and the economic impact of the business. And, you know, that is a really hard balance to strike, but I think one that's going to be more and more important for companies going forward.
Yeah. And I think it's great that, you know, Guild and hopefully many more companies are kind of baking that social awareness into their business model because it is important. I personally believe that the bigger and bigger companies get, the stronger of a social responsibility they have. And so it's really, really great to see organizations really taking ownership of that and using it to do great things. So definitely applaud you for that. At Guild, do you work primarily with companies, with universities? I mean, I know that you obviously are the connector between the two, but who do you work with more there?
Guild works with both, and that's part of the magic of the Guild model is bringing those two worlds, the corporate world and the education world, together in a way that really hasn't been done before. I spend my time really on the academic side, so helping build new partnerships with my team, with academic and learning providers. We work with institutions like Oregon State and LSU and Southern New Hampshire and other great institutions. And we also work with the short form non-degree providers that we were talking about earlier in the podcast. And so we really have a pretty broad view of the overall education landscape, which is great.
And are you constantly trying to create new relationships with higher ed institutions? I know a lot of our listeners may or may not be interested in connecting with you. Would they be able to do so? And if so, how would they be able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are constantly talking to providers and institutions and adding to selectively to our what we call our learning marketplace. And so I'm happy to talk to anybody who happens to be listening to the podcast, and you can reach out to me via LinkedIn. But absolutely, we are always looking for good new partners who understand how to serve working adult learners or really, really are committed to that population.
Yeah, well, of course, we'll throw a link to y'all's LinkedIn, to your personal LinkedIn, and listeners can also visit guildseducation.com to learn more. Kind of wrapping things up, I have one more quick question that I want to cover with you. It's on your list, so it's fair game in my opinion. Debt forgiveness. What do you think the new administration, like, what do you think is going to happen with all of the talk around debt forgiveness and, you know, the goals of the new administration? What are your predictions there?
Yeah, well, it's happening in real time, right? I think there is going to be a multi-billion-dollar debt forgiveness program. If I had to guess, I think it's going to end up around $10,000 per qualified student. Where it's really going to get hung up is what a qualified student looks like. And I think that will be the challenge for the administration and for Congress to converge on that. But I do think that there is going to be a debt forgiveness package. I hope there is, because there are a lot of people, a lot of students who will graduate or have graduated with really crushing amounts of debt that will never allow them to get on a path for economic and social mobility.
Yeah, and going back to what we were talking about earlier, maybe they decide they want to stack a certificate on top of their skills or upskill or reskill for something that's specific to their job. You know, hopefully the job will have connected with you and provide that for them. But if not, you know, that stifling college debt, it really makes it hard to do so. Like, you don't want to add more when you have enough already.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I think that's where employers can play such an important role, right, in both providing education benefits, but also investing in that upskilling and reskilling and the new skills of their workforce.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about just how many benefits there are for the people, for the companies that employ them, for, you know, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, just bringing more people into that space and giving more people the opportunities to really get up. You know, it's really great. It's really exciting. I know there's a lot of big changes and they can be a little bit intimidating and a little bit scary. And even for, you know, people who are just in the workforce with all the changes, it can definitely, I know personally, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but we're figuring it out. You know, despite all that, there's a lot of really exciting things happening and definitely excited to see where everything goes moving forward. Want to wrap things up a little bit here, but is there any kind of final thoughts that you have as we close out the podcast or anything that you'd like to let our listeners know?
I just think it's an exciting time. It's an exciting time for education and the future work and where those two things intersect. And you know, I think now is really the time to innovate around connecting those two things. So I think, you know, unfortunately, COVID accelerated some things that were already in motion. We didn't want a pandemic to sort of push innovation, but we are here now, and I'm very optimistic about how education institutions can change in really positive ways, and how employers can connect with the education system in a way that really creates very new pathways for employees and people around the country.
Absolutely. And you know, Kumar always says we like to have reoccurring guests, bring people back in, you know, a year and a half or so. So we'd love to get you back on the podcast a little bit down the line and maybe talk about how some of these changes have kind of flushed out in the past year.
Sounds great.
Thanks for listening to the Higher Ed Podcast. This episode was brought to you in part by Engine Systems and Chief Digital Marketers. For more information on topics discussed, you can visit engine.systems or chiefdigitalmarketers.com. Join us next week and every week after for more innovative and actionable advice.